I've been gearing my presentations more and more over the past couple of years towards what we're really trying to accomplish at Freedom Scientific, and that is not just create AT, access technology, but we're trying to create a solution so that people can not only gain access to applications, but become really efficient with applications. So we're trying to create tools and training material and trying to expose some of the underlying elements in applications so that you can get at it in a more efficient manner. So we're going to look a little bit at several applications this morning, and I'm just going to touch on some of the features in the product that we've introduced over the last year, maybe even one or two that we've introduced even prior to that. But it isn't by any means to say this is everything in JAWS for Windows or this is the best in JAWS for Windows. It's just a sampling. In an hour, I just want to kind of touch on it. Now, some of the things that I do, I will share with you the keystrokes that I'm using. If you insist, I'll tell you what it was so that you can make a mental note. But it isn't important for you to know the keystrokes because I'm going to take you in and show you some of the help stuff and show you where you can learn those keystrokes. So don't try and feel like you got to memorize what I did to get that to happen, because there are a lot of things in JAWS, there are a lot of things in Windows that we have to learn. There are keystrokes that I learn every year in Microsoft Windows that I didn't know the year before. So you don't have to know everything, you don't certainly have to use everything, but if there's something that I do, think about how it might apply to what you do every day. Maybe you're doing research on the internet or you're processing lots of email, and maybe I'll show you a trick or a tool that you might think I could probably use that to make it more efficient.
We have some materials here.
So before I start, let me just let you know what's happened the past year, where we're at, maybe what's happening coming up. So I'll give you a little bit of the schedule on the software. Since last CSUN, we released a JAWS 6.2 update in the July time frame. It was a free update for people who had 6 that were showing last CSUN. And then in October of 05, this past October, we released JAWS 7.0, and that was what I did the write-up on. So I know you were all hoping to come here today and see 7.0, but that was last year's news. We're already into 7.1 right now. Things are moving quickly. So in about September, we really got started on the 7.1 update for the 7.0 release that came out in October. This is going to be a free update for all 7.0 customers. It was posted a week ago yesterday as a public beta. So if you have 7.0, or if you have an earlier version of JAWS, or you just want to see what the 7.1 product is like, you can go to our website and download it. I also encourage you to read the What's New that is posted on the web page. It's many, many pages that talks about a lot of the areas that we worked, some of the increased enhancements we've made, and it lists about 206 or so bug fixes that we included in this update. So you can download 7.0. There are a couple of key things in it, and I'll talk more about it as we go. This will be a final release. It'll end up on CD, and it will become the shipping CD during the second quarter here this year. So sometime in the middle of May, end of May, it'll become the shipping CD. So if you do want it, you can wait till then and call and order a CD, or you can download it from the web. You can get it now. It is beta software, so I would encourage you that if your job depends on your machine, and others would probably advise you not to install beta software, I would probably say you may not want to install beta software on your machine. It is not perfect yet, but I feel very confident that it is not going to hinder the behavior of your machine, and it should not impact your other versions of JAWS that you may have installed. It does install to its own folder, and it will not touch your current JAWS. Okay? Do read the instructions, though, before you install. One of the great features coming in 7.1 is a new installer, the Microsoft installer we're switching over to. The Microsoft installer is really appreciated by large organizations and government agencies that push software out to machines. Microsoft Installer is a trusted source on the Microsoft operating system, and the handshaking just works much better. And we felt it would be a big step in the right direction to prepare us for the Vista operating system, which we hope will be out next year when we get here. Once you've installed 7.1, there'll be an option for you to go to the help menu and check for updates. I did it this morning from my room, and I downloaded another version, or actually part of a whole version, to update my 7.0. It's not available to the public yet, but it's going through its internal testing right now. We've been fixing things over the past week to 10 days. Some from the reports that have come in, some from the things that we knew were wrong, and we'll be getting that update posted as soon as I get back next week. So once you've installed the public beta, you'll be able to check for updates and get the fixes as fast as we put them out. And we'll get some more feedback on you on those fixes. Yes, Jeff?
Eric, will the updates allow you to review the fixes available for download from the help menu?
Yeah, they'll be, when you go to check for updates, there's a link to read the description of what was in it. So you'll be able to actually gain access to the write-up that we give you on what was in those fixes.
Terrific. Thank you.
One of the key things that we've included in 7.1 is linking it closer and a little tighter to our Magic magnification software. Magic will be getting a release 10.0 that's coming out simultaneously with JAWS 7.1 when we release it. Magic is now using the JAWS speech engine for its magnification speech, and when you install JAWS and then run the two together, the magnification speech shuts down and JAWS enhanced speech from the True Screen Reader kicks in, and the two products will go together very nicely now. So Magic will do the tracking, JAWS will provide the speech piece. And I think it'll be a great combination, good solution. One other thing I also want to mention at our booth, if you haven't had an opportunity to get by the booth, Freedom Scientific has entered into the video magnifier business, and we have a line of CCTV and a small portable Opal device. So there's Topaz CCTVs and Opal handheld, and we do have them at the booth. Please get by and take a look. I think this is going to be a very interesting opportunity for us to expand some of our reach into this industry with the video magnifiers. So I could spend a lot of time going through the menus and talking about all this stuff, but what I generally like to do is just dive into some applications and let's see how they work. And I'll explain things as we go. And the first one I want to show to you is Skype. I may have shown it last year. I do show it at most of my sessions now. Not because there's any fancy scripts in JAWS to make it work or there's anything related to JAWS special for Skype, other than the fact that we work with MSAA, and if they've implemented MSAA, this stuff tends to work pretty good, and that's what's happening now with Skype in some areas. I show Skype because it's a tool that I use every day. I just think it's neat. Anyone here using it at this point? Quite a few hands, so a lot of people last year at this time, if I had asked, very few hands would go up. You might want to make note of this one, S-K-Y-P-E, S-K-Y-P-E, Skype.com. You can go there and download this software for free, and it's what they refer to as voice over IP. So I install it on my computer, someone in some other location installs it on their computer, and if we're both on the internet, we can see each other through the Skype network, and we can call each other and have a phone conversation, so to speak. You can also instant message with it, which isn't as acceptable as some of the other instant messaging, so I don't use it for instant messaging. I just use it to have conversations. Now, I use it because a lot of the people I talk to are outside of my calling area. It would cost me something. And I do a lot of business calls from home when I get up in the morning. I call Australia, I call Europe, and it doesn't cost anything to talk back and forth across the internet. So it's a great solution. You can also have conference calls, so you could Skype in a couple of other people. So I've got a guy that works for me in our testing area who lives in Moscow, Oleg, who is standing by. I talked to him a little earlier. I saw he was online. I said, you want to come to CSUN this year with me? And he said, okay. And so I said, I'll ring you up. So that's where we'll start. We're going to ring him up. So
select the system 3 icon dialog, list box, Skype left there, and away right there at 107.
Does that sound all right? It sounds like it's breaking up a little bit. If I turn it down, maybe it'll sound better.
It sounds a little distorted.
Yeah.
Volume 107. Messenger data batch signed in 307. Not connected 407.
Is that loud enough for you? Okay.
Yes.
All right. So we want Skype.
Yes, Skype left there, the way right there at 107.
It's sitting right there in the system tray. And when you're logged in, it gives you a green circle. By the way, there's about 55, 60 million people have downloaded and installed the software. And at any given moment, there's usually 5 or 6 million people logged into the Internet online that have it, that are in the Skype network. It's becoming very, very popular.
Enter. Context menu. Change status submenu.
So pops up a little context menu.
Quit. Open Skype. Enter. Leaving menus. Skype trademark dash area camera. Contact list. List view on the chef and online. 14 of 15.
So it found my contact list, and it actually put me in the contact list at the same spot I was the last time I was here, which was on Oleg's name. And anyone else who you've got in your contact list will be there. So Oleg is sitting there, and I have a little $10 microphone, a stick microphone that I carry around in my bag with me because it's nice and slender. I've got it plugged into my PC where the mic goes, and I'll just press enter on this. It'll dial up Oleg. It'll call him on his PC, or there's a pocket PC version available. He's got it installed on his Pac-Mate, so he'll have either his PC on or his Pac-Mate on, and that's where I'll be calling him.
Enter.
I like to show this because it used to be that the latency was so bad on across the Internet with this stuff, but it's actually pretty good now.
If he answers.
He's out getting coffee.
Good evening.
Good evening, Eric.
How are you?
Very well, thank you. How about you?
Great. So everyone in the room, welcome. Say hello to Oleg.
Hello.
Hello, Oleg.
Hello, everybody.
So it works very well. Someone in the back row there, Jamal, say hello.
Hello, Oleg.
Oh, is that Jamal Masrubi by any chance?
It is.
Okay. Your name is very familiar, even here in Russia.
So this is really nice because you can set something like this up. I have conference calls with people where I have several people in my office and we'll have the microphone turned on. When the test department at Freedom Scientific has their weekly meeting, they use Skype and bring Oleg into the call there. And we also can Skype in. We have some testers in India that we use and we can Skype them in as well. Works really good. And as I said, you can do conference lines. You can bring in two, maybe three people. The more you bring, the worse it gets. So when people tell you how great it is on conference calls, it isn't. I really like it one-to-one, but as soon as you start bringing in two or three people to have a long meeting, it gets a little tedious. Anybody have any questions for Oleg? What's the weather like there?
Oh, it's getting pretty warm. It's like 28 or 29 degrees Fahrenheit.
Now, are you on your PC or your Pac-Mate?
I'm on PC right now.
Good.
Can I ask about the weather in Los Angeles?
Yeah, it's actually been very cool this week for a change. Usually it's, I don't know what it is in
60,
yeah, 60, 61 today, so cool.
Oh.
Usually we get about 70, 75 during the day and about 60 at night this time of year.
What time is it in Moscow right now?
Yeah, what time there, Oleg?
It's 8:34 p.m.
Good. Okay, well, thank you for joining us at CSUN. I will be back in the office on Monday, and I'll talk to you then. So I press escape and it goes away. Now, one thing, when you install Skype, It isn't real keyboard friendly out of the box, but if you go through the menu system, you'll find a place where you can turn on keyboard keystrokes to work, and you can use Alt page up and Alt page down to answer. That's about all I ever do with keystrokes. The next program I want to dive into is MSN Messenger. I have the 8.0 beta version installed on my computer, and I know that last year at the CSUN convention, MSN Messenger was near and dear to many people's hearts, and they had released a new version, and it wasn't working with JAWS, and it was a big task to get the changes necessary made, the underlying changes in JAWS, to make MSN Messenger work right, and we had that scheduled and slated in our 7.0 release, and I think we did a very good job. 7.5 was supported very well, and we're ready to go with the 8.0. We are on their beta team, and I've got several people looking at it. So another friend of mine, Brian Harchin, who is with a company called TNT Consultancy in the UK, they create an interface between Naturally Speaking and JAWS for Windows called JSAY. Is everyone in here using JSAY at this time? Several hands. Now, last Friday and Saturday here at the Marriott, they actually did a two-day hands-on JSAY seminar. And I talked to several people that attended that, and they were really excited about it, very impressed. And I can't emphasize enough the importance of working with a company like in the States here. It's next generation technology. They're the distributors for JSAY. But you've really got to get with a company like that. These guys, this is all they do, is put these products together and figure out all the problems and try to resolve them. So it's a big task. It takes some training. It isn't necessarily designed for everybody. I think if you can use the keyboard and you're a good touch typist, I would continue to use the keyboard. But if you have someone that does need the extra assistance because they don't have access to a keyboard, that JSAY and JAWS together with Naturally Speaking is a fantastic solution. I encourage you to give it a look. Well, let's see if we can raise Brian.
JAWS dialog. Select the system 3 icon dialog. List box. Skype left parent, online right parent. 1 of 7. Volume 2 of 7. Messenger data dash signed in. 3 of 7. Enter. Context menu. MSN home page.
So it's set up so that when I turn on my computer, MSN Messenger just get yes, Vita.
Hi, are you currently using 7.0?
This is 7.1, but everything. I'll tell you if there's anything that's going to behave differently on your computer running 7.0, I'll let you know. So far, I'm not showing you anything new from 7.1. Okay. I will show you a couple of new things in 7.1, but I'll point out what they are.
My email inbox. Let MS exit. Open Messenger, enter, leaving menus. Messenger 8.0 beta contact list, error camera left parent online, right parent online button, expanded.
So it works similar to Skype in that it puts you in the contact. Did I turn it down too much? Can you still hear it in the back?
Yeah.
Okay. So it kind of puts you in the contact list and you can walk up and down and see who's online.
Preview item, right parent, left parent online, right parent.
And there's Brian, he's online, so I'll press enter on his name.
Enter. Right parent dash conversation, input edit, enter message here.
So it puts me into an edit field, and JAWS has been specially scripted for this, and Brian actually did a lot of the testing and helped us with some of the design ideas here, but JAWS is set up to automatically help give you some information here, give you some extra keystrokes to let you know what you're doing. I won't tell you the keystrokes here, because if you do an insert H while you're in this program, you'll get a nice virtual viewer help screen. And it gives you all of the description of the keystrokes and shows you what you can do. And there's a lot you can do here. But let me just type him a message.
Page, ah, space, B-R-I-A-N, cop, space, E, space, O, U, space, A, E, R, E. West, Eric Emery says, colon, hi, Brian, are you there?
And on his end, his computer
just is writing a message.
Pulled the message up and it said that. So we were just told he's typing a message.
I don't hear the typing sound.
Oh, you hear it. It's low.
Mm-hmm. It's low. I got it turned down.
Oh, there it is.
Brian says, colon, I certainly am. It is great to be talking to you.
Okay, so his message came in. JAWS read it automatically. We've also set it up so that if I were typing and he started writing me a message, it wouldn't interrupt the fact that he was sending me a message. I would still get that information because we turned off the typing interrupt specifically.
W-E-L-O-M-E-S-U-N. Eric Emery says, colon, welcome to CSUN. private part to design a message.
Now you can turn off with the verbosity options the little typing you can hear. You can also turn off the fact that it tells you that Brian Hartchin's writing a message. If you're only using this with one other person all the time, you don't necessarily need to hear all of that stuff. He's a busy typer. Huh?
Is he actually typing or using JSET to do it?
We'll ask him. Now, MSN Messenger also offers the opportunity to do that voice over IP stuff like Skype does. I haven't used it much, but you can actually press a keystroke. Anyone know the keystroke to do a voice record?
It's off the action menu, Eric.
Okay, but there's actually like a control F2 keystroke or something. You can press it down and hold it.
Well, that's a voice clip.
Yeah, a voice clip.
Yeah, only 15 seconds.
Right.
And also ACB radio. The coverage has been excellent.
Good, so they're listening to ACB radio, so he must be... You guys aren't live at the moment, are you?
No.
No.
That would be
kind
of weird. He'd be listening to himself.
It would have been cool. Tell him ACB radio says thank you.
Okay.
ACB space RAIO space SAYS space TANKF exclaim. ARE space O space UNIT space KSAY. Eric Emery says colon. ACB radio says thanks. Are you using JSA?
Standing up trying to type.
Eric, do you know if any testing is going on with the voice over IP phone features in version 8 of Messenger Live?
I don't know. Any testing of the voice over IP phone features in Messenger Live?
Microsoft is adding the ability to make phone calls.
I'm using JSA in order to be able to dictate my message into the MSN conversation window.
Cool, so he's using JSA right now, so he has set it up and scripted it to work together with this.
G-R-E-A-E, period, space. T-A-L-A, space, oops, while in space, F-A-E-E-R, period. Eric Emery says, colon, great, talk to you later. Ryan Barton is writing a message.
It's one of those things where I'm going to get the last word in.
Ryan Barton, okay, thank you for writing.
Okay. Sir, in the front, Steve.
I have a question. When you're done writing your message, do you hit enter, or how does he know that you're done?
Yeah, when you're done writing your message, you just press enter, which activates the send button to send that communication. Now, what I didn't show you is that while we had that message window up, you could go back and review. You could say, start at the beginning of our conversation and let me read through it and walk right through the message. Okay. Or you could say, let me hear the last thing that was typed again because I got interrupted by somebody else and I missed what he said. And there's a quick keystroke, a real easy keystroke, to say, repeat that last thing one more time. You can also move to the history area, select it with a control A, copy it to the clipboard, and take that information with you and paste it someplace. So it's very easy to go and grab. If somebody MSN messaged you a website or something, it's nice to be able to go into the history window, select the link, copy to the clipboard, and take it with you. You can also carry on multiple conversations in MSN Messenger, so several different people can be writing back and forth with you individually, and you can assign hotkeys to those windows so that you can quickly jump back and forth between
I'm going to
change my status here.
Not invisible.
Make myself invisible because people will keep on start calling me to see I'm online. They'll think I'm working. You know, whenever you create a feature in your screen reader that everyone else adds to their screen reader almost instantly, you know you found a real winner. And that happened when we did quick navigation keys a number of years ago on the internet. Quick navigation quick keys, you know, you wanted to push the letter H for a heading or N to get past all the links and find some text. There are many different navigation quick keys that we use to find form fields and things like that. And it becomes a standard practice. So if you use JAWS, if you use the internet on a regular basis, even if you use another screen reader, and you're on the internet, you're using navigation quick keys, I would guess. Is that true?
Yes.
Absolutely. And it's a great way of getting around. Now, is it Is it necessary to make something accessible to have navigation quick keys? No, that's a usability feature. So when I talk about trying to make things more usable, that's exactly what I'm talking about, giving you tools to go in there and do that. If a big company were creating a screen reader, and there are a few out there, the chances that they're going to go in and they're going to add in these kinds of bells and whistles that we all like and use on the keyboard are slim. And those are the things that we really focus on.
Windows M, desk W, web W, what's new at 7.1.doc, shift enter, enter.
I have a document that I created here. I went out to the website, and I selected the what's new from the web, copied it, and pasted it in here into a Word document so I could have a nice big Word document that we could, you know, play with a little bit, see how it works. Now, quick navigation keys on the web, as soon as you land on a web page, you can start using them instantly because normally when you're on a website, the letter keys don't do anything. But in a Word document, you wouldn't want that. So when you load up a document, if I start pressing letters, I expect text to go in and that's exactly what will happen. It gets out of the way. It doesn't bother you. However, if you're in a say-all, if you've started doing a say-all in your document, would you ever start typing during the say-all? Why not? Exactly. You can stop, navigate, make sure you're in the right spot to start inputting text. So we decided that we would just make these things work during a say-all. Okay, so I'll show you that first. So I'll start reading from the top.
What's new at JAWS 7.10, automatic updates, June check for updates.
And now, as it's reading, I'm going to press the letter H a few times, and we'll cycle through the headings in the doc.
The list of updates and new installation program. The installer has been revised using
H again.
Synthesizer and Braille Manager. The Synthesizer and Braille Manager allows you to add
H.
HTML to the Internet. Improved performance on the web. New Internet and HT visible focus rectangle. When you press tab or shift plus tab to move the links.
And if I do a shift H,
visible focus rectangle.
It'll back up to the one that was previously being read. Okay, so I just hit the control key to stop it there. So that's a little bit in say all. Now let's start it again. I'll tell you, there's another quick navigation key or two that you don't see in HTML, which I'll explain in a Word document. P would be nice for paragraphs, right? Well, what would be good for pages?
PG.
No, because it's a single. Page down would have been nice.
Yeah.
But why couldn't we use page down and page up?
It would change speech rate.
Because it changes, no, it's not a word function. It's a JAWS feature that during a say-all, you can increase it or slow it down. It's a really nice little feature. So I got creative, put on my creative thinking cap. It came up with space bar to advance by page, backspace to go backwards.
Oh, cool.
Great little feature. So I'll start the say-all here.
When you press tab or shift,
hit the space bar.
And page 3, one setting for the uniform table. Table 1, column 1 of 2, row 2 of 3, top level, page 4, row 2.
It just moved to page 4 and it landed on the table.
Out of table, page 5. If you press insert page 6, comment indication for merged cells.
So it moves to those pages and it keeps on reading it. Backspace.
Plus shift page 5. Out of page 1, let's do it. JAWS 7.10, automatic updates.
I just backspaced and it got me right back up to the top page. Okay? And the say all just keeps going. Now,
would that work with skim reading on as well?
The quick navigation, it probably will. If you're skim reading a document to say all, it will. In this document, on page 4, we all heard there was a table, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you are a sighted person and I gave you instructions, there's a table there, just look in the table on the document, what would you do? Sighted person. You grab your mouse, right?
Yeah.
And you'd grab the scroll bar and you'd start pulling it down, and then when you slipped off the scroll bar, you'd go back and do it again. And eventually you'd get the table on your screen and you'd stop and you'd be able to work with your table. If you're a screen reader user in a Word document and you don't know about quick navigation keys, what would you do?
Page down and arrow down until you found the table.
Page down and arrow down. More likely you'd be arrowing down until you found the table. It would take a while to find this table. But if you have quick navigation keys and there's a way to turn them on,
click keys on.
Anyone know it?
Insert Z.
Insert Z toggles quick navigation keys on and off. If you turn them on and press the letter
T.
T.
Uniform table. Table 1. Cool. Column 1 of 2. Row 1 of 3. Page 3. Next grammatical error.
You jump right into the table and it places you in the first cell. It finds it very quickly, and you can move on. If there's another table you're looking for, you can hit T and go to the next one.
Non-uniform table, table 2, column 1 of 2, row 1 of 14, page 9, description, column 1, row 1.
Go to the next table with another T.
No more tables found.
Or there aren't any more, and you stop, okay? You can use this for footnotes. You can use it for comments. That stuff was all there in 7.0, the version that you've got installed hopefully today. Now, if you install the 7.1 beta, we've added a few new ones. I'm going to show them to you now. I'll go back to the top.
Top of five, what's new?
Now, if you're a sighted person and you wanted to look through your document for any spelling mistakes, there's a couple of ways to do it. There's three, really. One is you can read it and look for them, or you can run the spell checker and stop at every one and ignore or add to the dictionary and dismiss it and go to the next one. And what's the third way?
Alt-Shift-L, all control.
Sighted person.
Look for the red lines.
Look for the little red lines underneath the words. If you find a word that's been misspelled, it's got a little red line under it, right? And that's how we kind of skim through our document looking for spelling mistakes, deciding if that's what is going on. So with quick navigation keys on, I mean, they should still be on.
Quick keys off. Quick keys off.
You can just hit an M for misspelling.
Braille D. R-L-L-E selected.
Nice. It finds it, highlights it, says it, and spells it. And you can hit M and go to the next one.
Braille D-R-A-I-L-L-E selected.
It really did go to the next one. It was, Braille was again.
Braille D-R-A-I-L-L-E
and again. We spell that wrong a lot, huh?
Braille D-R-A-I-L-L-E
again.
Firefox.
Spell Firefox wrong. So it moves down through your document. It finds the misspellings, and you can decide right there if you want to hit the context key, bring up the menu, make the adjustment. You can just type over it if you want. Turn off quick navigation keys, type over the word and fix it, or just move on and find the next one. If there's a grammatical mistake, how do they reference grammatical mistakes on your document? With a little green squiggly line. Now, G does graphics and R does revisions, I'm going to show you in a minute. So A became grammatical.
Page 4. JAWS now indicates the type of certain fields when they are displayed in the insert plus F5 list of form fields selected.
So it selects it and reads the whole thing to you, and you can move on to the next one.
Page 5. If the request insert plus F5, the insertion point is in the table cell, JAWS announces table and cell formatting information about the table as well as the usual information about the document selected.
Now, if you decide, I wanted to go back to that previous one, how would you go backwards?
Shift.
So shift with any of these will take you backwards. Now, let's look at revisions. This is a really cool one. I'm going to go to the top. Before I came here, I sat in my room and I went in and made three modifications to my document. And is anyone using revisions today? So what happens when you do these things is a document gets passed back and forth between you and someone else, and they make some deletions and insertions, and then you get it back, and then you change the stuff that they changed, and then you send it back, and then they change the stuff that you changed. And this happens in contract negotiations all the time, right? So it's really, when you get the document back, the last thing you want to do is have to read the whole thing and remember what was there. And that's why these revisions are nice. You can turn on track changes, and visually, you can see what was crossed out and what was added. And it's very easy to tell looking at the document where those changes were made, so we don't have to read the whole thing. Now, could you find those with JAWS 7? The answer is yes. Yeah. You could turn on track changes with JAWS, and you could down arrow through the document, and if a line contained a change, it would tell you about it. It was a little cumbersome to go through the document in that manner. Okay? So, R for revisions. Now remember, I haven't turned on track changes yet. I'm just going to hit the letter R.
You must turn on track changes to enable this feature.
So it's smart enough to know that you haven't got track changes turned on, so that's why you're not going to find the revision. So I'll turn it on.
Track changes on.
There's a Windows keystroke to do that. Control Shift E. Now I'll do an R.
Delete the text. Now page 7.
And it jumped down and it found on page 7 that there was some deleted text. It highlighted it. And it told me that it was deleted text now. Now, if you go to the verbosity dialog in JAWS, you can get JAWS to tell you as much about that as you want. You'd like to know who made the deletion and when. All of that information gets announced. I just have it set to tell me if it's deleted or added. So I'll go to the next one.
Insert the text includes page 8.
And the next one.
Delete a text, test. Insert a text, 4. No revision, 4. No more revisions. Now.
Okay, so I had 4 revisions there, and I walked right through them. Yes, Jeff?
Can you read that in context?
Yes, if you do a say line, it'll read you right where you are, because you're actually on the text. You know what I mean? So that's
what happens if you're there and you press insert Z to go out, you're still there, right?
You're still there, and then you can make modifications. Okay?
Can
but what you're really looking for in these revisions is to just walk through and see, did they make any changes here on
me? Can you unrevise that one and just see what it sounds like once it's been changed the third time?
Can you what?
Change one of those for the third time. I want to hear what it sounds like with multiple.
It'll come back and it'll just have that there's another revision, and you won't know unless in JAWS, in the verbosity dialog box, you tell it to tell you who made the change and date and time that the change was made. And then
okay.
All of that gets announced as it lands on it. Okay?
We have
a question.
We have a question back here.
Yes, sir.
Where some of these options are, is it listing somewhere?
The quick navigation keys are listed in the help system. And if you're in Microsoft Word and do an insert H, or do an insert F1, F1 puts you right in the help in the Word section, and you can review it there. Or if you just do an insert H, it usually gets you enough information to get you jump-started here. Like, it'll tell you how to turn on quick navigation keys. It won't list them all there, probably. But you'll guess what they are as you start going through them. And you can turn on keyboard help generally and walk through and find out what different things do. Yes, Bob?
Can you press the applications key and get a context menu to make the change without doing the insert Z first?
Good question. So when you find something like a misspelling, can you do the application key and jump to the menu to make the change without turning quick navigation keys off? I actually just sent an email about that one this morning because that's exactly what you'd want to do. You don't want to have to remember to turn off quick navigation keys. If any time you have quick navigation keys on and you hit the application key to get the context menu, we should store the fact that you were in quick navigation keys, let you go do that, and when you return to your document, turn it back on. Right?
Yes.
That makes sense?
Yeah.
Yes. That's the way it'll be in 7.1, I hope. I just wrote that one up this morning because I bumped into the same thing. So no, the way it is now, you got to turn it off, then do the applications key, and then turn it on when you come back, and that doesn't make any sense. From a usability standpoint, we need to be smart enough to know what you're trying to accomplish and then try and accommodate that. So that's our goal. Good question. All right, other questions? Yes?
I have a question. These revisions, are these similar to being able to read the comments that, like, let's say a teacher gives you you send a teacher a document and they make comments and visually you can see that there is a comment being...
Yeah, it's a little different, but I believe you can grab a list of comments in a document. Does anyone... I don't use that feature in Word, but...
I haven't seen that, but I didn't know if that was...
I'm guessing in the verbosity dialog there should be something there to display that, and if there isn't, if you've gone through and looked at the help system and you don't see anything in the verbosity dialog, if you send us a document, feel free to write to suggestions at freedomscientific.com with a document attached and say, this is what we're trying to do in the field. This is how we're using it. Is there a way that you can help alert us that comments are there and give us a way to list those comments? That's what we should be doing, is just to tell you that comments exist and give you a list of those comments. There is a quick navigation key, I believe, to move to comments. So I have a feeling that technology is there right now in 7.1. Yes, Bob?
So I know that to get comments before it was Alt, Control, Alt, apostrophe to list the comments. And control.
Yeah, so Bob is saying that there was a keystroke, Control, Alt, apostrophe or something. So I would say don't try and memorize that one.
But if that's
do the insert H.
That's a lot better. Yeah.
Yeah. The quick navigation way of doing it, you don't have to remember the keystrokes. Okay, so while we're here, let's do a skim read. Someone mentioned skim reading earlier. This is a feature, I think it was inappropriately named. I think we should have called this the JAWS Superfind or something like that, because that's really what it's all about. So skim reading, when I open up a document as a sighted person, I do not necessarily read every word on the document, especially if there's something I'm looking for, whether it's on a web page or a document. I kind of skim down through it and I look for something that matters, and then I read about it. I might even use the find feature in the program to find a particular word, and then I quickly look at the sentence the word is in and decide if that's where I want to be, and if it isn't, I do the F3 or whatever it is to go to the next one. That's how you skim through a document. You kind of do a search. You're searching for things and deciding if that's the area. You read it in context, so to speak, as Jeff mentioned. Is there a way to read it in context? You really need to know that. So that's what skim reading is all about. You can say, let me read every paragraph, but just the first sentence in those paragraphs. And then I'll decide if that's where I want to be. Or you can define text rules. And that's what I've done, is I've set up a text rule so that I can...
skim reading dialogue. Text rules, colon, combo, box. Quick dash, quick keys, one of zoom.
I'm going to, in this document, I'm going to say, JAWS, go find all of the things in context that contain quick keys, and let me see what they say, because I want to learn more about these quick keys, but I'm not sure which area. Maybe it's written several different places. So I pulled up my thing, which I had previously set up. You can build as many rules as you want in this dialog box, skim reading, and it's in 7.0. You've all got this. And you can add as many rules as you want. If your rule doesn't work, you can modify the rule. You can tell it to find multiple words. So you might, on a newspaper I've mentioned before, you could say, find anything that's got flood, earthquake, hurricane, fire. And that could be called bad news. That's your rule. And when you're on the newspaper, you choose bad news, press enter, and it'll go find all those occurrences and show them to you in context and let you decide if you want to read those stories. And then you can delete these bad rules that you've created if you want. But so I've got a couple of rules, and I've got it set up so that it will go and find those and give me the sentences containing the thing it found. And the default button is to create a summary. And this means put it into a virtual buffer for me so that I can take it out of context, take all those sentences out of the document, and let me look at them and read through and decide which one I want. And that's what's going to happen when I press enter right now.
Enter.
So the document just went all through 19 pages. We just searched the whole thing.
Skim read summary. Link one. The focus rectangle does not.
And it found all the occurrences of these. It put them in a virtual buffer. It made them a link, and now I can walk through it.
Link two. New navigation. Quick keys. Link three. The following additional navigation quick keys are now available when using Microsoft Word.
Aha! What new quick keys got added for Word? I'll press enter on this link.
Enter. The following for more information.
The virtual buffer goes away, and I'm in my document now.
The following additional navigation
on that spot.
When using Microsoft.
And I can review it, and I can keep reading from here. And at any point, I can say, go back to the summary, and it'll put me right in the same spot in the last summary I created and let me keep picking through from that point. Okay?
What is the key to move back to the summary?
I think it's Windows key say all. But I could be wrong. Let me try.
That's a lot of...
Summary.
Boy, Mike, smart. It took me a delay. I haven't used that one for a while, but my logic brought me there. Bob first, then hold on, Denise. Bob?
What command did you use to bring up skim reading?
What command did I use to bring up skim reading? It was a control shift with the say all. I want to do a controlled say all here, so I use a control shift with the say all key. Or, if you want, just remember, insert F2 brings up the list of managers, and skim read is one of the choices there. So you can launch it from that spot, too. There is also a very nice write-up in the help system. So if you go to the JAWS help and you go to the index and search for keywords skim read, you'll find all about skim reading in the JAWS help system. If you're going to use this, don't think it's something I'm just going to sit down and start it. Go home and practice it. It's a tool. It's something you have to learn and implement into the daily things that you do. But I think it's a great feature. Yes, Marlene?
When you were going through the links, were you pressing tab?
I was down arrowing, walking through the page, the virtual buffer.
Thank you.
It's just like the insert H virtual buffer or insert F1. Okay? Denise?
He asked the question I'm going to answer.
Okay. All right, anything else? Yes?
What about on the line we're using There was a demonstration yesterday with using window eyes and the...
window what?
Window eyes, sorry. And, I'm sorry, and some of the new Ajax controls.
Ah, yes, DHTML?
Yes.
Yes, we had a there was a Firefox presentation given this week, and IBM and the Mozilla Foundation, along with Glenn Gordon, our CTO, were there, and they brought up a web page on the, I'm not sure where the website is, it must be on the IBM site, where they've got sample DHTML applications there. And Glenn demonstrated going in and walking through a spreadsheet that's in DHTML. So this is extremely interesting to us. Currently, IE is not properly supporting accessible DHTML. And so I think that that is where most of the interest will lie. So we're actually looking at what our opportunities are there to give access in that environment. But it is going to be in 7.1, the beginnings support for this DHTML, and I think you should find it very useful. Okay? And DHTML stands for Dynamic HTML, and it's a way of companies basically delivering what looks and feels like office-type applications displayed in a web page. And so what we as screen reader users need to try and accomplish is to give users the look and feel that they're in an application. It's got a, if it's a tree view, it needs to look and feel like a tree view. Okay? We don't want to have to come up with special ways of handling these things on the web. So if you know how to use an Office app, you should be able to jump to dynamic HTML apps down the road. Jamal?
What are your plans for Visual Studio 2005? Are you going to do custom scripts? Are you going to do an add-in?
Well, prior to doing custom scripts, there is internal work that needs to get done, I think. There is some significant internal changes to make, and then I think some more custom scripts could be done. There were some custom scripts and an add-in on an earlier version, and this is one of those tasks of many that's on our list. I know that the Blind Programming Group is very interested in seeing this this work evolve. There is not a whole lot of accessibility built into these applications. They're fairly complex, and there's quite a bit of work, I think, to get them going right. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
It's pretty good, though, now, really. I mean, it's not perfect, obviously, but it's
We think it's getting a little better. We have done a tremendous amount of work over the last year in modifying the way that we're accessing applications that have implemented MSAA. So out of the box, you should get a much cleaner MSAA interface to an application. So if some company has created something and they've built in MSAA for their menu system. So I'll give you a good example. Audible. Is anyone familiar with the program Audible?
Yes.
So quite a few of you. So Audible is a place where you can go and download books and store them on a Pocket PC device or on a Movo, like a little MP3 player. And you can listen to books and magazines and so forth. It's a subscription service. So every week I download my Car Talk. I love the Car Talk guys, and they're on Saturday mornings, and I'm usually doing something with the kids or I'm working, so I miss it. So I download Car Talk on Sunday and listen to it on the car on the way back and forth to the office. And then I also get a book a month. I think it's like $15. So I've digressed a little bit here. So Audible has a program called the Audible Manager, which installs on my PC, and I use that to maintain my library of books and move them on and off of my player. And this program, Audible Manager 4 at least, the menu system was totally inaccessible. It didn't work well at all. And special scripts had to get written. Now, if they had just implemented MSAA in the menu system, it would work very easy, and we wouldn't have to jump through hoops, and we could focus on the usability stuff. We shouldn't have to figure out how to read the menus and the dialogue. We should be focused on how to use the application and really make it much better. So we worked closely with the Audible Manager Group. They released Audible 5.5, and have actually got a consultant that's very close by there. Their programmer actually went on a Sunday and spent a Sunday afternoon with this guy, and with some help from us, they've got their information working a little better, and 5.5 is actually pretty accessible right now in 7.1. There are updated scripts as well. Yes?
Is the Holocaust above you up on micromedia?
I missed the question.
Can
Dreamweaver. We haven't done any other further work right in that area at this time, and I'm not sure how much more MSAA or anything else they might have implemented. When I have looked at that program in the past, and Dreamweaver is used for creating a web interface, a website, and there's just a tremendous amount of windows. There's an awful lot of things going on, and I have a feeling that this would be a huge undertaking to get Dreamweaver working correctly. Is anyone trying to use it at this point? Yes, Mika, any comments?
I've downloaded it and kind of used, I mean, the menus and things are generally accessible, but I haven't dived into it too deeply, but I think it is a popular program that people are using creating HTML, so it might be something to look at, being one of the mainstream programs to do that.
We do have a pretty, Dreamweaver is Macromedia, which is now owned by Adobe, and we have a pretty good working relationship with the Adobe folks and the Macromedia team. So we are working on some stuff, but primarily the interest still lies today with those groups, with PDF and Flash and something called Flex. Flex is a tool that's going to be used to create Flash movies that'll be doing reports in programs like SAP, for instance.
Critical.
Yeah, that's pretty important stuff, and that's really, I think, probably the next attention we're going to get with this organization.
So at this point, what would you recommend that somebody uses?
I don't know. I don't have a recommendation. I'm sure there are several people here, and everyone's probably got a different tool they use. I'm not the best one to comment because I don't know much about creating web pages. Yes?
Relationship with Intuit?
Good question. How's the relationship with Intuit? So Intuit creates several programs, and the one that's of the most interest generally is Quicken, or QuickBooks. Well, let me speak to Quicken for a minute. So Quicken 2006 is out right now, and Quicken 2003, which was the last version that someone had actually written pretty decent scripts for. If you do online banking, I believe as of April, you can no longer use Quicken 2003. So it's really becoming a critical issue. I've had a lot of people write to me and contact me. I have written and made a couple of pretty good contacts, I think, within Quicken. And while they haven't stepped up to the plate, so to speak, yet, they've at least been willing to talk to me. They've sent me some software. And I've got someone going through 2006, and we're trying to create kind of a report to go back to Quicken and say, because we don't have a document object model COM interface to your application, because you haven't implemented MSAA everywhere, because of all the control IDs being different and window classes being non-unique, it's very difficult for us to be able to write scripts and access this program. And we'll see if they come back and work with us. So I say all this. The short story is it's not real good news. The good news is, the longer story is, at least we've got a dialogue with them right now, and I'm hoping things get better. I do think also that in the future, everyone's heard of Vista?
Yeah.
So Vista is the next operating system from Microsoft. And one of the things that we'll start to see once Vista comes out is that programs can be written using something called UI automation. And UI automation is a little better interface than just MSAA was. And UI automation, if it's used in programs like Microsoft Money, I encourage you to encourage Microsoft to get the Microsoft Money group going with UI automation and Money. Once those things are done, then all of the screen access programs will really be able to tap in and start to put together some really good interfaces to those programs. Right now, it's just a matter of trying to figure out where you are and barely read the screen, so it becomes, even if we do get it working, only something power users can use. So UI automation should help out, yes.
What is the situation with regard to Vista and drawings?
So at our booth, I hope you will, when you leave here, go out the door, turn right, go to the end, turn left, go all the way to the end, and then step through those doors there, and the Freedom Scientific booth is right there. And on the right side, you'll be able to walk over and say, show me that Vista machine running JAWS. And we have a machine there now with a version of Vista and a JAWS installed, and talking remarkably well. Yes.
There's high stakes testing in some states. Are there any accessible high stakes testing for kids to graduate from school? Are there any accessible programs?
I'm not aware of any. So this is like the SAT type of.
Or some of the local state tests. Some of those are on the computer.
But because I don't know of them, doesn't mean there aren't any. I think there are different.
There's some that look like it could be.
Yeah, there's different action going on in different places. Many of these are HTML-based, and many of them should be able to work. Out of the box, we would hope. Those that cannot, some of the bigger companies, I will say that we're having conversations with them. I can't say any more than that, but...
It would be nice to standardize in the one.
It would be really nice. It would also be really nice to get some of the distance learning programs really working well. The chat area in particular, I know I've talked to several people here at the convention about it, and it's still a pretty big problem. Yes?
IE7.
So if you have 7.1 installed, the public beta, and you get a hold of IE7, you should be able to now work within it. Now, not everything is talking exactly as you would like the tab controls and so forth, but we'll be working on that, and that'll be coming along in the 8.0 release. But you should be able to use IE7 with the public beta. Yes, Daryl?
Okay, so a question I'd like to get a little more detailed about support for Firefox. I know that it's working in 7 and 7.1. When will that support be official, and then will JAWS support the IBM accessible DHTML graph standards that are...
So let me repeat the question for everyone. What is the official stance from Freedom Scientific on Firefox, and when will we officially say we're supporting it so that you can call our tech support and our guys will answer the questions? And when will we officially be supporting the DHTML IBM standard that's being rolled out in Firefox? That will not come out officially in 7.1 release. However, there are many improvements there. And in 8.0, I think we will get even better. However, I would like to poll the room real quick. Can I see a show of hands, those of you who are using IE on a daily basis? Can I see a show of hands, those of you who use Firefox on a daily basis? Now, can I see a show of hands, those of you who use Firefox by default on a daily basis? Okay, so about 6 people in this room, maybe 8 people, are using Firefox. Now, those of you who are using Firefox with your screen reader, you're a screen reader user and Firefox is your default browser? 3. You're not a screen reader user. You just happen to have it.
Okay,
2.
But
my point, but Daryl, let me finish my point. So my point is, the majority of our customers are still asking us for IE. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, I think they'd like to see DHTML working in IE. Not that they don't want to see it in Firefox, but that isn't where the calls come to us, and we have to respond to our customers as best we can. So IE7 is really important for me to get all the functionality in IE7 that's going to be rolling out for us all later on this year and get that working well. And we will also focus on Firefox and get it working better and better the more we use it. Now, and let me just make one more comment on Firefox. Firefox actually works quite well with screen reading today. So for those of you who are, I have it installed on my computer, I have them both. IE is still my default, and IE is what most of my customers are using. So, okay? Time is just about up. Jeff, a quick one?
Yeah, I just wanted to find out what the timing is for 7.1 and 8.0.
Good, so the timing for our coming releases. The 7.1 update, we want to have released in the second quarter this year. So we are rapidly approaching a date that we can publish something final. We are busy working right now back at the office. I'm going back to get started again with the team and bury my head in the sand and work with them, looking over reports and fixing as many things as we can. I would say we're still a good 4 to 5 weeks out for sure, but I'd like you to watch her updates. And if you would, please fill out those reports. Give us as much information as you can. The report's right on the home page. We're always looking to reproduce problems, and the better you can do it, the more it'll help. 8.0 should be along in October. We're busy working on it right now. You will need 8.0 to start with Vista. You will need 8.0 to get going properly in Office 12. That's the next version of Office from Microsoft.